Welcome to Life After Journalism, in which we hear from the people who brought us the news and see what they're up to now that they've moved on with their lives. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and as the minute waltz fades away, we ask that the imaginary studio audience please welcome our guest today, Matthew Ricketson. Matthew is a former journalist from The Age, The Australian, and Time Australia magazine, and is now a professor in journalism at the University of Canberra and assisting in the media inquiry. He begins by telling us how he got into journalism.
I've always had a love of sport, both doing it and reading about it, and I noticed there was a sports writer for The Age at that time, this is around 1980, named Jeff Slattery, who wrote in a really interesting and innovative way for that time. And I didn't realise this was what you could do in journalism. I didn't realise you could write in this engaging, personal, quirky, funny, etc. way. And then I started to do a bit of freelancing for The Age in 1981, writing about theatre, I think, at the time, and sport and other things. Got an opportunity to go and do some work at a local paper in Cheltenham. When I came to apply for a cadetship at The Age at the end of 1981 for 1982, I was quite well placed because I had a lot of experience working on the local paper.
You went on to have a career with The Australian and The Age and the Time Australia magazine, isn't that right?
Yeah.
How did you find your career and what eventually made you decide to look into academia?
I really liked doing journalism. I really liked what you could find out, what your role was. I thought it was an important role to perform. I enjoyed it. It's a lot of fun. You have that front window seat as various historical events are unfolding. By the time I got to the Australian office of Time magazine in 1989, that was really interesting from the point of view of learning a whole different way of doing journalism. They have a different approach at Time, and that was both challenging and interesting to learn. But by about 1992, the sense I had was that the same stories kind of kept coming around and again and again, and I was thinking, didn't I write this story 6 months ago? Haven't we done this before? And that, coupled with a sense of never being able to really investigate things in much depth, led to a sense of frustration with that. And then out of the blue, I got a call from Sally White, who at that stage was running a journalism program at RMIT. And she said that there was an opening there. Did I want to try it? I had done a bit of sessional teaching, and I liked engaging with students and talking about journalism, how you do it, how you can do it better, etc. So when this opportunity came up, it was full-time. It worked in a kind of family sense, and so I took it. And then I really began to realise that there were things that I could do in academia that I had had difficulty doing in the daily news area, and that is I could investigate things in more depth. And apart from enjoying it, what I really discovered was that I actually started to work out what journalism was about and why I did what I did as a journalist by actually needing to study it in order to teach it. It also threw into sharp relief how, when you're working as a daily journalist, you don't have the time to do that reflective work. And that trend has intensified rather than the reverse in the last 15 years with 24-hour news channels and the internet and Twitter and social media and so on. The pressure on journalists now is greater to just be producing continually. And it means that you don't reflect on what you do, why you do it, how you do it, can you do it better, what impact you has on other people. All of those things meant that the more I got into journalism education, the more I found that that was actually really both profitable and really important.
Do you think that that's something that other journalists could benefit from as well?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. It's probably one of the things I've said consistently since that period, because I really believe that. As you look at the News of the World phone hacking scandal in England, if you try and imagine the conversation that the reporters who were doing that work had with their partners, girlfriends, boyfriends, family, whatever, at the end of the day, it's very hard to imagine them having a conversation along the lines of, how was your day, dear? Oh, well, it was fine. I hacked into a missing girl phone.
Yeah.
You either never had the conversation or you're so deadened to the impact of what you're doing that you are actually ceasing to treat the people you're writing about as human beings. You're just literally treating them as pieces of a story jigsaw that you're just quietly and blithely assembling in your newsroom.
When you went from academia to being a journalist again full-time, did you find a big change in the way that you worked and the way that you approached stories?
I certainly tried very hard to bring back into the newsroom what I'd learned in the academy. At that point, I'd been at RMIT for 13 years, and I had learned, I thought, a lot. and I wanted to bring that back into the newsroom. So the then editor of The Age, Andrew Jaspin, approached me to do that role as media and communications editor, and that was one of the things I said I thought would be of benefit to the paper. You know, if I look back on the stuff I did with The Age during that period, I think I did do a lot of articles that did reflect that background, whether it was in the steps of the analysis, whether it was pushing out particular kinds of news angles, whether it was reporting circulation figures more fully, readership figures, and the online readership figures, because they hadn't been reported before in any consistent ways. You know, I brought that in, that that should be done because it makes sense to and it makes no sense not to. And I'm sad to say that that's not done anymore, but it was done in the period I was at The Age.
Mm.
We had a half page on the media each week from the middle of 2008. One of the segments there I introduced was a thing called My Media Diet, where we'd go to someone in the media each week and we'd ask them, what do they read, what do they watch, what do they listen to, et cetera, et cetera. That idea has now been picked up by a few different places, like Crikey. But those are two concrete examples of things that, if you like, I think came out of my background in academia, and the more obvious things are the kind of features and analytical pieces that I wrote that reflected a kind of deeper knowledge and engagement. That was limited. I found that there were things that I still either couldn't cover, or I had the view that the news media, because we scrutinise everybody else, we should be scrutinising ourselves, and when things to do with Fairfax came up, you needed to report on them without fear or favour, and that was difficult to do. That was always difficult. It's a natural impulse to not want to shine a light on yourself, but that's actually what you've got to do if you're Fair Dinkum. You know, the ABC does that much better with Media Watch. There is a much stronger culture of that in America. It's not as well developed here in Australia. I mean, obviously we do have Crikey, we have some very good people that do stuff for Crikey, like Margaret Simons, but it's not a very well developed culture. That was one of the things I was trying to develop. Some success, but I wouldn't say I had anywhere near as much success as I would have liked on that front.
Yeah.
So in early 2009, when I was approached by the University of Canberra to be their inaugural Professor of Journalism, I took that because I really do like both doing journalism and doing teaching and doing research and academic work. I like all of those activities, but
yeah,
all of them have shortcomings. And for me, it's worked reasonably well to kind of go backwards and forwards between both areas at a level that's applicable to other people. I think it actually helps if you've got people in the industry who are well informed about the history and nature of what they're doing, and if you have in academia people who are well informed about the actual practice of journalism in newsrooms.
Which do you identify as then, a journalist or an academic?
Both. If you ask me the passport question, right now, I write academic and journalist. When I was at The Age, I used to write journalist and academic.
Oh, I like that.
So all I've done is flip the word one to the other, but I am both, and I'm happy to be both in that context.
It sounds like from the outlook that you were talking about, that you wanted to look at the news and the way that the media operated, you do sound like the perfect kind of guy to assist with a media inquiry, you realise.
Well, you can say that. From one perspective, other people would say, look, we want just a full academic there. We don't want someone who's had a practice background. But I would agree. I think that those twin backgrounds are actually really helpful for this inquiry right now, because part of it's about the regulatory regime, and it helps there to have an understanding of how, in fact, the media operates. And part of it is about the impact on the business model of the internet and what that might mean, and whether is there any role for government in assisting or not. It's an open question, but yeah, it does. It does.
What's a piece of advice you would give to people who are trying to get into journalism?
Keep your options open and keep your thinking open. You may well go and have a career in journalism and never be anywhere else, but if you are aware of its history, aware of where it's going, aware of its role in society, its impact on people, then that's going to make you a better practitioner. I'm not making an argument that everybody should do what I've done. I've stumbled across that. This wasn't my plan back in 1981, if you know what I mean. I'm much clearer now in hindsight on what I have done than I was on the way through. But, you know, I mean, I'm 53, so I should have figured out a few things by now.
Matthew Ricketson, Professor of Journalism at the University of Canberra and assisting in the media inquiry. That's the end of the Life After Journalism series. I'd like to thank all my guests. I'd like to give it a big up to Upstart and I'd like to leave you with an applicable thought from philosopher Bertrand Russell. A stupid man's report of what a clever man says can never be accurate because he unconsciously translates what he's heard into something he can understand. What I think old Bertie was trying to say here is that sometimes you'll hear something that's just a bit too highbrow.